Newsweek, April 13th, 1981. The profile of a gunman. John Hinckley standing in front of the White House. That is a typical CIA stunt, such as G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt standing in front of Dr. Lewis Fielding's office when they wanted to get some information on Daniel Ellsberg. It's to prove that they did the job and go into the historical record of their role in doing the job. Newsweek describes in just one, two paragraphs on the left side, John Hinckley, empty life of achievement, finally succeeded, apparently alone, historical deed, the act of a loser, a drifter, tried to impress the actress, almost willful failure, obscure life, he wanted a job, a role in history, he invented his own history, he left few vivid impressions, he left no favorable ones, he remained a nonentity, he committed a crime in Nashville too trivial for him to be fingerprinted. That's because he was a nobody, not because the judge knew that he worked for the Defense Department. Self-made failure. His father's friends never knew he had another son. Then it goes on to say that the father was deeply involved with Christianity, the World Vision International, a humanitarian evangelical society, a charity, relief agency. It doesn't tell about their role with helicopters and weapons in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in Nigeria, and prolonging the war, the civil war in Biafra, among other things, or planning to move down to Guatemala, where the rightist regime is shaky and could topple, similar to the Somoza regime in Nicaragua. And then the next sentence is the clue to the case, in case you want to erase everything else they said as blatant lies. The family retained Edward Bennett Williams' law firm to represent Hinckley after his arrest. When you hear the name Edward Bennett Williams or Melvin Belleye or F. Lee Bailey or Mark Lane or William Kunstler, you know the CIA is in on those cases. Grant Cooper sometimes, but he represented Sirhan, but he stayed out of it. But these other men are brought in over and over and over again, and they simply are fingers to stop the dike from leaking, to plug the holes, to limit it to what you saw on the street. And when you get Edward Bennett Williams, you have something else. In 1972, when the Watergate story broke the headlines and I published Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, I wrote that John Kennedy wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. That the CIA that killed President Kennedy because he won votes and eliminated Richard Nixon's election followed him and fingered him for death, and that they used murders, attempted murders, hired killers, planted patsies, and the news coverage to cover their crimes. And then I said there are two governments that have existed side by side, one visible and one invisible, for many years. And as the power structure gets more arrogant and sure of itself, the invisible becomes more clear and overt. And I wrote that all those persons arrested at the time of Watergate and each of their contacts and sources of funding will be protected, and it was, by every possible method. Every means of avoiding answers to questions will be used, but even silence will prove beyond a doubt that those arrested and the ones that got away from the Watergate Hotel were working for the CIA at the time of their arrest. And I said that the Democratic Party, if they wanted to avoid a coup d'etat, should use people like Jim Garrison and myself to describe what's going on in the Democratic Party, and that the Democratic National Committee had a lawsuit against Richard Nixon and for $1 million, and that they shouldn't go through with it at that level because they're not capable, that they need more than a Warren Commission investigation to go into that. Well, years after I wrote that in 1978, and I wrote that in 1972, 6 years later, a book came out by Jim Hogan, H-O-U-G-A-N, called Spooks. Some of you have it and some of you don't. It's published by Bantam. It's in paperback. It came out in 1978. And 6 years later, Jim Hogan, who's written wonderful articles on Intertel and the interlocking private police forces in this country, wrote in the introduction to his book, it seems fitting that in a country where people aspire to two of everything, two cars, two kids, two homes, we should have two histories. And we do. A public chronicle or the Disney version. So widely available as to be unavoidable, and a second one that remains secret and buried and unnamed. Americans have come to suspect the existence of this second history, the Watergate affair, with all of its intertangling people, and he refers to the CIA and the spooks. One subject, then, his subject in spooks is not about the CIA, the agency itself, but the agents of the CIA, such as James McCord and E. Howard Hunt, and the private agencies like Mullen Associates, Robert Mayhew Group with the Howard Hughes Organization. The private sector has become the arms of the octopus. The heart is the intelligence, defense, intelligence, national security agency in Washington, D.C. But what they do is ferret out people from their agencies to the private sector, who then do the work for the agency, so that in the event the person gets caught, the agency isn't to blame. That's why James McCord said he was formerly with the CIA, and when he was arrested, he, in fact, was continuously working for the CIA. That's why Robert Mayhew hired the assassination team starting in 1960 for our domestic assassinations. The CIA had been doing them overseas and in various countries, starting with the Shah of Iran, putting him in power and getting rid of Mossadegh. But we had been conducting and overthrowing countries all over the world, but our own domestic overthrow of this country through the use of assassination was done by a combination of agents. The CIA didn't want to be responsible alone, so they brought in the anti-Castro Cuban community, who were feeling low after the failure of the Bay of Pigs. They brought in organized crime. It wasn't the first time the CIA used organized crime. They used them, Lucky Luciano, and they used them from the end of World War II, if not long before. J. Edgar Hoover used the fellows hand in glove. They worked very close. But it was the Mayhew organization that brought in the assassination teams, and they were to do our American assassinations and then kill the witnesses also. So the book Spooks is about that second branch of people that do these espionage operations. And the most important person in this entire book, it's a good book, is Edward Bennett Williams. He has some descriptions of Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney who has been called to represent John Hinckley, his office. Hogan says that Edward Bennett Williams is the most powerful, probably the most powerful man in the United States. That's not his direct quote, that's mine. I'll give you some of his other quotes, but what he said is, when one imagines his clients, this is Hogan's quote, it is difficult to imagine any attorney who has been more strategically placed. He also said, more than anyone else, Kennedy may have the keys to American history. Besides Watergate, his clients include, and I gave you some of those last week, and I'll give you a list of more, and I'm sure there's more that we don't have known yet, because I have many books on Edward Bennett Williams and his firm in Watergate, but we know they include the Watergate defendants, a lot of them, Jimmy Hoffa, the Kennedy family is representing Ted Kennedy in the Chappaquiddick affair, when the Watergate plumbers were making the Chappaquiddick affair and killing Mary Jo Kopechne and photographing him with Tony Laswitz at the same time. He represented the Teamsters, Joe McCarthy, Robert Mayhew, who set up the assassination teams with the Hughes Organization. He's the one who got Mayhew the job with the Howard Hughes Organization that kidnapped and killed Howard and used it as the umbrella for the Nazification of America. It's an interesting thing that I said that Mayhew was used to take over the entire Hughes Organization with the murderous teams and create the future Nazification of America, because here is Hinckley, part of a national, international Nazi movement, and the attorney representing him is Edward Bennett Williams, who set up Robert Mayhew into the Hughes Organization. He represented Mayhew's case against Aristotle Onassis, favoring Niakros, the Greek shipbuilder. He handled the murder case of an OSS Major William Holohan, which was supposed to be a very sticky case. He represents Robert Vesco, the man who holds international terrorist drug-running assassination teams linked to Turple and Coricola and Samuel Cummings in London, and the Carlos, the terrorist, the people killing the Jewish athletes, Jewish citizens around the world, and calling themselves a terrorist guerrilla group, where they really represent the far right, working with the PLO, funded and trained in Lebanon for shooting and so forth. He represents Robert Vesco, And that ball of wax, and Bobby Baker, with close links, of course, to Lyndon Johnson and the whole era of the Kennedy murder. He represents the fixers of Meyer Lansky and his narcotics, swindling, blackmailing, prostitution, drug ring, long attorney friend of Frank Costello, who in the book of Frank Costello describes his close associationships and relationship to Howard Hughes and Charles Lindbergh and Frank Sinatra. At the time that Frank Sinatra was fixing up the Kennedy boys to be bugged and blackmailed and wiretapped, sleeping with Marilyn Monroe and Judith Exner and various women from all across the country, old Blue Eyes was fixing the Kennedy boys up, and he was closely associated with the far-right Republican group that were out to get John Kennedy, and Edward Bennett Williams was the attorney for all of these characters involved with the blackmailing and the counterintelligence. And it was very useful that there was a movie star, Frank Sinatra, with his mob backgrounds to fix Joe Kennedy and other people's boys up so that they would be kept in the palm of their hand whenever they wanted to do them in a revealed part around their career. And, of course, he represented John Connally, who was Secretary of the Navy and Secretary of the Treasury and was caught with his finger in the milk bottle in Texas, and par excellence CIA Director Richard Helms, who orchestrated all the above and other cases. Our whole American history has Richard Helms and Alan Dulles threads going through it. Edward Bennett Williams represented John Connally. It was John Connally's press secretary, Brady, that was shot in the ambush. And with Edward Bennett Williams representing John Hinckley, you can believe that Brady will forget who shot him, because they will make sure that there's no malice and we're not mean. We're living, and thank God we just crawl on our hands and knees and have a half a brain. So who would get mad at a nice American kid, you know? With that, Edward Bennett Williams owns all of these people, body and soul, so you know John Hinckley is going to get off. He worked with Bernard Spindell. That's the man that handed Jimmy Hoffa wiretaps and taping of the sexual liaisons of the Kennedys and the information that organized crime needed to frame John Kennedy. And when he was murdered, J. Edgar Hoover and the gang owned these tapes, and they delivered them allegedly to Edward Bennett Williams. So Williams discovered and worked very closely in office with people like Robert Mayhew of the Hughes Organization. Mayhew on his own, besides the organized crime and Spindell group, had cameras, the Tony Lasowitz variety, and running what he called a cookie factory. And he would provide sexual liaisons of people from the New York police, would set up their prostitutes for whatever kinky kind of sex the King of Hussein wanted, or Sukarno. Or he would fix the military brass from the Pentagon and the dignitaries and members of Congress, so that between Mayhew and Hoffa and Spindell and Lasowitz and that gang, all represented by Edward Bennett Williams, he in fact does hold the key of American history. I've said for a long time that history is controlled in this country by bullets and blackmail. And certainly Edward Bennett Williams knows more than any other person in the United States, and it's interesting how he's chosen for this loser, John Hinckley, to be his lawyer. Hogan says in the book Spoofs, Edward Bennett Williams is all over the place. His list of clients and is exotic enough to satisfy interlocking fantasies of any conspiracy theorist. Now, a conspiracy is two or more people doing an illegal act, and you have to agree that there were some conspiracies among this cast of characters. These John Connellys, Robert Mayhew, you know, the disappearance of the Hughes body, never seen Mayhew and John Roselli taking it with machine guns to Texas and from Texas to Boston Hospital, Mayhew's territory with Larry O'Brien in Boston. As soon as Robert Kennedy was assassinated by June 28th of 1968, Robert Mayhew, for the CIA, had hired 4 to 5 of Robert Kennedy's top aides, including Larry O'Brien and Mr. Oliver. Those are the two men whose desks were being looked into at the time of Watergate. You have to admit that this is a clever operation where when somebody is assassinated, you immediately pick them up and hire them and give them money. It's like Clement Stone offering the Secret Service agent that was shot in Washington to go down to his place in Acapulco and vacation and get over the shock of being shot. They will appease them and pay them not to prosecute Hinckley. And you're going to see a strange court case here. This was the trick that I've referred to many times that Adolf Hitler used of the guilty getting off. You're going to see John Hinckley get a little tap on the wrist. I seriously doubt if he will ever get, say, a life in jail for attempting to kill the president. There was one fellow that had a water gun that shot at Ronald Reagan when he was a candidate, and Reagan gave him 10 years. He never had a weapon in his life, and he got 10 years, something like that, in jail. I think he's still languishing. The guy was down in Florida, and I have it in my file somewhere. As against a street scene where he comes out of the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C., and you see this guy gunning down, or another person gunning that they're not looking for. After 90 days at Durham, North Carolina, at a mind control center for the federal government, it will be interesting to see what kind of a trial Edward Bennett Williams pulls out of this. As I say in the book Spooks, they refer to this Bernard Spindel, a friend of Jimmy Hoffa's who was out to get Robert Kennedy because Kennedy was going into the links of crime and crime figures and the Teamsters. And so they bugged the Kennedys, bugged Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy sleeping with Marilyn Monroe and Judith Exner and so forth, being fixed up, and then handing these tapes over to Edward Bennett Williams, who was a member of the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. He not only was president of the Washington Redskins, but he became a power in the Democratic Party. He was a bigwig, continuously setting up the officials of the Democratic Party while representing Robert Vesco and Frank Costello and Richard Helms and John Connally and all the people that were killing off the Democratic leaders. If you wonder why the Kennedys don't do anything in terms of opening up the investigations, it's because any image of the family, they can't bring them back. But they were, as I say, screwing all over the place, and those tapes exist. And so they just choose to let it go and let the men live on their records and their old tired speeches. And every time there's an anniversary of their death, we see the family at the cemetery, and we hear Mrs. King giving a few words as if she's a black leader. She's a black nothing. She's a ridiculous widow who hasn't got the guts to speak about the things I talk about or the way the men were led to these activities that aren't any different than what the very people in power do themselves. If it was any different, you'd have something, a scandal maybe, but it's one group photographing another, and the people that are doing the photography do the same things, and that's how they know what happens, and they live vicariously. Remember Lyndon Johnson and J. Edgar Hoover used to sit in the White House and watch the films and sounds of these various public officials having their paramours. And what really kicked them wasn't the fact that they were having these affairs, as that they controlled them. And they knew Hoover and Johnson or Nixon or Edward Bennett Williams even controls Ronald Reagan to sit in silence until he fades away. It was Jack Anderson that talked about tapes or pictures, not Jack Anderson, Drew Pearson, that talked about possible activities, homosexual activities and scandals of Ronald Reagan back in his past. So he sits up in his parlor on the second floor and looks at elephants and holds his Tootsie's hand and eats jelly beans. And I guess he's just glad that he's got both halves of his brain, even if he isn't photographed frontwards saying, good morning, how are you? We have to see them backwards walking out that rose garden. For Mr. Hogan to write that Edward Bennett Williams may have the keys to America's secret history is a really filthy implication of what we've become. I've been on the air 9 years, and I've done 17 years of research. And all the bases that I've studied, the assassinations, the torturing in other countries, the disinformation, the lies, the cover-up, the fraudulent trials, the fraudulent investigations, is epitomized in Edward Bennett Williams, who takes on one more client, because everybody that he represented there, he hits all the bases. Now, he had some clients that were losers, and that's natural, too, representing the Orlando Letelier family and Sandra Moffat, and even Hogan suggested that there was a contradiction, because the very people that killed them, the anti-Castro Cuban group, the Alpha 66 in New Jersey, linked to Florida, linked to the CIA, were the very people that did the killing. And he chose for, in quotes, free or low fee to represent people that had been killed by his victims on the other side who could pay him more money for their services. He represented Adam Clayton Powell, one of the few black people in Congress who was sent away in disgrace to an island and died. He was a loser, and Edward Bennett Williams represented him. But his white counterparts that did 10 times more than Powell did and do it today, and we got a peek of it at the time of Korea Gate, but it's blatant now. And out in the open, Powell was sent away and the others go on and hold their positions, and nothing happens to them. Edward Bennett Williams represented Tony Boyle, who was in a struggle with Yablonsky over the United Mine Workers. Yablonsky's family were all blown up and murdered. He was fighting the black lung disease in the Appalachian Mountains in West Virginia. It was a bitter struggle. I have a book on Death and the Mines by Britt Hume. He's a writer that worked with Jack Anderson, or still does. A tragic story of the mine situation in the United States, and Tony Boyle was represented by Edward Bennett Williams. The most scary part about Edward Bennett Williams is his long association with Robert Mayhew, because it was when Mayhew came into the Hughes organization that Howard Hughes as a person diminished in life and body, and a devil was left as a victim in a concentration camp, locked up in rooms with needles left in his arm and a skeleton about 80 or 90 pounds. A man named Vance Cooper, who just was drugged out of his head, and they simulated a Howard Hughes. Robert Mayhew worked for the FBI and worked his way up into the CIA in 1947 when it became the CIA. And he opened a private office in Washington as a private service called Small Defense Plants Administration. This is in 1952. But from there, Mayhew formed a private intelligence office in 54 that Hogan says was possibly a CIA proprietary cover. So that's where I think the Vanderbilt Energy and the Vanderbilt Resources Group, that the father had a proprietary CIA cover all along. That's why I think they brought in Edward Bennett Williams. Mayhew worked his way up into the Hughes organization, and Governor Lex Alt, who was governor of Nevada at the time, who ran Ronald Reagan's campaign and is the liaison of Reagan to Congress, said he never believed Hughes was in Vegas at the time they said he was there. But if he wasn't there, then Mayhew was, and Mayhew was FBI and counterintelligence. And Mayhew had this long association with Edward Bennett Williams, who defended the very people involved in the assassination, so that under the umbrella of the Howard Hughes organization, assassination teams were set up. And also they assassinated witnesses and families of witnesses and families of researchers, and touched every single home through this network, including my own and others. They've touched all of our lives. But Mayhew was set into this operation, close association with Edward Bennett Williams. Then Williams could take people like Hoffa and Baker and Conley and the Robert Mullen Association that goes back to the Howard Hughes organization, and escalate the power in the White House in the hands of people like Alexander Haig and Butterfield. Their allegations that he was deep throat and that he had constant contact. He represented the Washington Post during the time of Watergate, and also Robert Bennett of Mullen Associates, and they could leak enough each day to just get Richard Nixon out of office, and Alexander Haig could present himself as the general with the cool, whereas Alexander Butterfield and Haig were bugging Richard Nixon to get him out. And now these same people and clients of Hinckley's have a gentleman on the street who shoots a president 1 inch from the heart. If it wasn't him, if it was a Secret Service agent in the car, it's even worse. But he's representing John Hinckley, and they're not charging, at least they haven't charged yet, for shooting the policeman or Brady, and they're wanting and dining the Secret Service agent, and the president is doing his one-liners. And if he does fade away and die later, Hinckley will be protected. They'll say it wasn't the gunshot, it was his age, and maybe as a result of the gunshot. I don't think if Reagan dies a year from now, it may be a complication of the shot, but they will have John Hinckley in and out at that time from some little tap on the wrist. The incestuous relationship between the clients that I named here cover a whole era, as I said before, of my research, and I can't spent enough time in Edward Bennett Williams to press the point of how important he is and why they had to bring him at this time. I'll do other broadcasts on the CIA links to the John Hinckley family, but there's one important point I do want to make with you, and I may repeat it on other programs on purpose or just to strengthen the point. There are a lot of discussions or the first newspaper articles that the Hinckleys didn't know about their son, that he was just fell off like a bad fruit or a bad part of the litter, and that the others were so handsome and talented, and Scott went to Vanderbilt University. His sister didn't go to any university for intelligent people and achievers. She went right from a high school in Texas to get married. The fact that she was a pom-pom girl didn't make him do all these acts and get to all these cities, or the fact that he saw a taxi driver. These weren't the factors at all. These were cover-ups. The point is that the Hinckley boy was raised in a family of far, far right. He heard all of this anti-Semitic, anti-black talk. The family hated Jimmy Carter. He wasn't stalking Carter. That's another cover story, like the Arthur Bremer story, stalking Nixon when he shot Wallace. He wasn't going to shoot Carter, and they certainly didn't want Mondell. There's no way those oil engineers from Texas or the Coors Brewery in Colorado and the moral majority would want assassination of Jimmy Carter at the time. Mondale wasn't their cookie at any time. He's a wishy-washy and in the pay of the used people, but he's too liberal and too intelligent. He's got too many things on the ball. He doesn't quite play that game, even if he's a trilateralist. But this kid had a lot going for him if you want fascism. He isn't a freak. He is a common phenomena. There are a lot of John Hinckleys out there. They are arming. They are training. They go to rifle ranges. They subscribe to magazines. They have conventions of weapons. They're collecting food stockpiles for the day, the doomsday that's going to come down. It's a game with them. It's a war plan of survival, and they're planning ways to attack and charge, and it's like pulling feathers off of a chicken. There are people that are relishing the confrontation of bringing on, as Manson said, the race war. There are people that relish the idea of going after the Russians, that have used the media to be told that we have this terrible enemy that's going to come and get us if we don't get them. Hinckley has one of the most expensive attorneys, and certainly the one who holds the key to American history, as Hogan said, because the key to American history lies in the succession of these political assassinations and the way the judges are paid off, the district attorneys are paid off, the police department, the FBI, the Secret Service, the Internal Revenue. These agents have all turned their backs onto facts. They take the easy out. They prefer silence. The major media does. And as I say, the fact that this man has the key to American history and that it lies with people like the John Hinckley Jr.'s is just a continuation of a long period of history. It began with racism. It began with bringing in slaves. It began with rounding up Indians and putting them on their own, what we called reservations. Adolf Hitler studied the reservations and called them concentration camps. He studied the way the Americans praised themselves for rounding them up, for fighting them, for poking them, for having their own sheriffs, their own kind of justice, and using the highest attorney from the Central Intelligence Agency to represent this loser, this nobody, this drifter, this wander, is so far from what is really happening. And the thunderous silence of this case is even more frightening to me, because when the left get somebody shot, I expect them to be quiet. But when the right gets somebody shot, I can't believe that they want it farther right and that they don't give a damn, that they're so numb to everything that's happening that they prefer to let them fight it out at that own level and take the consequences, no matter what the consequences can be. But we'll go back to the Hinckley family and John Hinckley later, but I did want to get to Edward Bennett Williams this week, and we'll cover some of that territory and be doing it for weeks to come. The more silent they are, the more loud I'm going to be. In the meantime, you take care. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll be with you next week.